The University Tower chimes bring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of Communication Studies, it's Professor Jason J. Roach.
Very nice to be here. Sometimes I sign Jason J. Roach the first.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Even though I don't have any kids yet.
But that's true. Well, but
anticipation.
There's not the last.
There's no question yeah. You're the first. There's just no question about it, frankly.
Exactly.
I was telling you guys about this wonderful little Twitter account. This reminds me that I was following Bleep Academics Say. And every day it gives me a nice little piece of joy. And it says, when you're signing up for your plane tickets and you experiment with the possibility of getting a different title, you know, when you actually get your plane tickets, the very Reverend Jason Roach, Lieutenant Colonel Jason Roach. It's like, should I include doctor? You know?
I'm going personally going for His Holiness.
His Eminence. Yes. Professor Kendra Evans is here from chemistry and biochemistry. Have you ever fooled with that before, the little thing?
No, I'm far too lazy to even push that drop-down menu. No, just avoid it all.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, I don't do that.
Because I understand that Delta's getting a little persnickety. They have to say whatever you tell them to say. And so I did it once a long time ago. I just put doctor, and they were like, thank you, Dr. Mayo. When I scanned my boarding pass, I was like, oh, I could have fun with this. I'm not telling Benvenuto. That's the first thing I thought of, actually.
Yeah, but then if there's an accident or something, somebody has a heart attack. Is there a doctor on the plane? Dr. Mayo, could you come help?
I know. Hopefully I'm wearing my T-shirt that says, not that kind of doctor.
Is there a pope on the plane?
Yeah, that's right.
We need a blessing.
His Holiness.
Unbelievable. Professor Prasad Vadugopal is here. He's got a light orange shirt on.
So here's what I want to say about this doctor business. Okay, so when you're adopting my daughter from India in 2011, one of the things you do when you adopt is you have the child go for a medical checkup to a doctor of your choice. So we had her do that. And so then I had to, so we got the medical report and we're looking at it. We can't understand a single thing that's written. It's all just chicken scratch. So I decided to call up the doctor in India, okay? And I call him up and I'm talking to him. Now the thing is, it says, Dr. Ishwara Prasad Venugopal is my name, right? So I say, doctor, I want to talk to you about some of this. And he goes along and he says, at some point, it's just usual standard notation. And I'm thinking, this guy thinks I'm an actual doctor, so he can tell me it's standard notation about height and weight and all this stuff. I can't understand a word of what he's written on this thing.
I love it.
He thinks I'm a real doctor. As we know, all Indians who come to the United States become doctors anyway. So.
You are a real doctor.
You are a real doctor. You're a doctor of knowledge.
Oh, right.
Doctor
right.
of philosophy.
Doctor, I forgot about it.
Doctor of science.
Like, do you guys remember that?
He had a really master's degree.
As an inside joke, if I'm a doctor of philosophy, doesn't that mean I can teach a philosophy class?
I believe that you were talking about traditions that we cannot talk about here. Well, why does Professor Schlick, Shula Schlick in our department, got her degree in Israel, and it is a doctor of science, which is what they usually give out in the Middle East, DSC versus PhD. So, yeah, but the students never figure this out. I even have my degrees hanging in my office, and they're like, you got a degree in philosophy? Like, yeah, that's what it is. It takes a lot of explanation. They don't get it. I do have a T-shirt that says, not that kind of doctor. I believe it's a Doctor Who reference, but everybody else gets the joke, at least around here. Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Thanks for retroactively filling out the coordination sheet.
Slowly but surely catching up.
What's going on in the lodge, man?
I don't know. It's just slow. Just horribly slow. So I just got up here as fast as I could. You know,
that's cool.
Like I always tell my wife, it's like the police chief on a hot date. That's all. Just turn the siren on and just drive like a madman. That's
sure. Makes sense to me.
In and out traffic.
Makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Chuck Hokit is here from ITS.
How are you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm hoping that you have been sufficiently insulated from the IT issues that have plagued UDM this week.
I had an instructor who emailed and says, I'm not getting my emails. I said, well, when did you convert over to the new system? He goes, I thought that was a hoax.
It's a hoax.
I said, no.
Now that is the best one I've
heard. That's good.
No,
you get so many.
He thought it was
so many. I think that's
like
really
that
reasonable
through.
That somebody yeah, would perceive, hey, this is a hoax email.
There were links in that email, and you know, don't ever click on a link.
That's exactly right.
I go, no, this is reality. Then you check it. Oh, it's working now. I said, I thought it was funny. I thought it was kind of funny.
Was it somebody who's resistant to change anyway?
No, not really.
That's very, very good. In the immortal words of Kendra and my colleague, department colleague, Klaus Friedrich, thank you, IT, for giving our students carte blanche to complain about not getting the message for the rest of the semester.
And that's right. That's
it's,
right.
It's going to be tough.
Email?
It's going to be tough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There were all sorts of things that were brought up at the training session, but it is a necessary evil. And this is a necessary evil. It's a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. It's a very nice post the other day from Professor Chow, fondly remembering former host of the show, Kathy Bush, by drinking some high cider.
That was
apple cider.
Mm-hmm.
Donuts, too?
I got donuts.
Oh, yeah. Those are the best.
I have to.
Now, where did you get them?
Westbourne.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Nice. It was right around the block.
Yep.
Then you go to cider mill.
Still not the same as coming out of that piping hot fryer, though.
Yeah, but then you've also got to spend like half hour just to get in line. And I don't have
the bees.
Exactly.
Don't forget the animals.
Spend them off. Yes.
You know, we were just finishing up a set of questions real quick from our executive producer, Vivian Dix, and they're about Vin Scully. There's only two more to go. Scully does not refer to a light wind as a breeze. Does you know what term he uses?
A zephyr?
A zephyr is what he calls it. Yes, that's some old school. He's kind of got a little Mr. Burns from The Simpsons going on when he uses words like
he
that.
He talks into the singing wire, don't you know?
The singing wire. I bet he calls a helicopter an autogyro.
I think that zephyr, is that a popular crossword puzzle clue?
Is it?
I believe I've seen that before.
It's also one heck of a Scrabble points getter.
I guess.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Z and a Y? Jeez.
And a P.
Oh, yeah.
And a P.
Mm-hmm.
And a bingo. She played all seven.
Nice.
Zephyrs. Plural. Plural.
Yeah, you got to pluralize.
Oh, yeah.
You got to pluralize.
Separately. Zephyrd.
Right.
One of the most distinctive characteristics of Scully's broadcast, for the record, also of Ernie Harwell, if you ever listened to him, was his use of pausing. How long did Scully pause following Kirk Gibson's pinch 1988 World Series home run?
At the Dodger one?
27 seconds.
Yes. As the Dodger one.
He was way longer than 27 seconds.
This is on the radio?
On the radio. And this man knows about dead air.
Well, it's not dead air if you hear a crowd screaming.
That's true.
But wow, yeah.
How long before he spoke again?
That was a dramatic hit, though.
Extremely dramatic.
Could you barely
walk? Was it 10 minutes?
Oh, okay.
He's a little like, oh my, what happened to Vince Scully? Passed out.
1 minute, 15 seconds.
Giving it to Kendra, it's 1 minute, 8 seconds.
Wow,
he took off.
That's an eternity.
That's two good guesses now.
I'm a good guesser.
On one leg.
I wait till other people make guesses, then I go in the middle.
Absolutely.
Then you go, so you went between 10 and 10 minutes and 28 seconds and found a minute 15.
Well, there was a big hint. It was, whoa, 10's way too long. So then you
I thought for sure Vince Scully just climbed out of the press box and just crowd surfed at that point. That's all.
Hi again, Matt and panel. Was listening to this past weekend's podcast and heard the laments of the panel. They know so little about non-classic TV. So since I had already had a file with some TV-related trivia in it, I finished it off earlier than planned and send it for your use whenever you need it. 1, 2, 3, now. There are no questions about Steve Urkel, Kimberly Richards. Thank you so much, Kimberly. We really appreciate the purposeful exclusion of Steve Urkel. What do the television series Mannix, Columbo, and Murder, She Wrote have in common other than being in the same genre?
The older most lead characters.
The
investigator, murder, mystery.
I'm thinking highest murder rate on television.
It's,
don't hang out with those people.
I know. That little nice
You're bound
little
to be charged
England
with murder
town,
or
where
die.
Everybody died every week.
Really, police officers.
Yeah. No, that's not what. That may be true, but that's not what they have here. It's actually a logistic
time
they
slot.
Have in
Monday night. Mm-mm. No. Okay. Trench coats.
Mannix
had that cool tweed jacket. Columbo
didn't have one.
Yeah.
They were all shot in a two-room set.
No, but I like that. I think that's cool.
Cool.
If it's true, it's cool.
Theme song.
I'm sorry?
Was it had to do with the theme song?
Nope, nope. You know what it had to do? They were all written by the same duo, all three of them, by Levinson and Link. So wow. They were all sprung from the brain of the same
such
two people.
Such good shows.
Yep, that's two men, by
so
the way,
good.
Which I think is kind of funny, but anyway. Murder, He Wrote didn't have the ring, same ring.
No, not as good.
Manic.
What was the first television series that was filmed in color in 1950?
Bonanza?
No, but I'll tell you what, you're in the right realm when Petticoat we're talking Junction. About something that is a Western.
Bonanza.
Gunsmoke.
No, I haven't heard
Rawhide. Of it.
This is 1950. This is right at the beginning of TV.
Wow. Superman?
No.
That's not a Western.
No.
Have Gun Will Travel?
Hop Along Cassidy?
No, no. Trying to think of a way to help you guys out with this. You know the nicknames that old cowboys used to have? And there was a nickname that was kind of young.
The Kid something.
Something the Kid. The
Rawhide Kid.
Not Rawhide Kid.
Billy Durango.
Starts with the letter C.
Cisco Kid.
Yes.
Cisco
Kid. Same as an investment firm. Oh, Cisco Kid. Follow-up question.
Who played them?
Oh.
Cisco.
Who is the first,
what
was the first official, as in from that point forward, everything was in color, TV broadcast, 1954?
What's the question again?
The official, that is non-experimental, like from this day forward, we're doing color TV in 1954. I'll give you a big, big hint. It occurred on January 1st, 1954.
Wasn't the Super Bowl?
New Year's Day.
So it was a New Year's special.
Rose Bowl.
Not Rose Bowl, but
Rose Bowl Parade.
Rose Bowl Parade.
Yep, the Tournament of Roses.
Wow.
Roses.
Yeah.
Wow. Which I'm sure looked a lot different.
I
want to
see the black and white Rose Bowl Parade.
Look at the beautiful gray hues.
Was it grayscale or was it black ink only?
Right. Oh my gosh. So, in 2002, TV Guide, which I don't know if you guys know this, but around that time stopped actually listing TV shows. Mm-hmm. Just became a magazine. Name the 50 worst television shows of all time. What was number one?
Manimal?
Not Manimal.
Darn.
That's awesome, by the way.
The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo?
This was, there's no question about it. This was a very popular TV show.
Chips. It's got to be Chips.
It's not Chips.
No. That's a very good guess.
It is not. It was a talk show.
Jerry Springer.
Jerry Springer is what it says
here.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you know TV Guide was bought by a local conglomerate.
Really?
It's moved out to Troy now.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah,
it's okay.
It's based in Troy, Michigan now.
Wow, I know some people who still live and die by TV Guide.
Yep.
Seriously.
More die than live.
Yeah. Literally. Literally.
The reason we invite Prasad is because he's a ray of sunshine.
Mr. Optimism.
So awesome.
What series holds the record for number of consecutive seasons in the Nielsen ratings top 10? 23 straight seasons from 1977 to the year 2000.
Monday Night Football?
No.
MASH?
That was a good guess.
We're talking 23 seasons.
Ooh, 20 Simpsons.
Not The Simpsons, because that was a little bit...
Not The Cosby Show.
Nielsen Top 10?
Nielsen Top 10 for 23 years.
60
and the
minutes?
Show is still on 60 minutes.
I was going to say, it has to be a news show.
Yes. When Morley Safer was a young man.
Yes, he was. Strapping young lad.
Mm. When 60 minutes actually meant something.
Yeah. What sitcom is called Lovebirds in Estonia, Our Worst Years in Denmark, The Waters of Marriage in Croatia, A Gruesomely Decent Family in Budapest, An Awfully Nice Family in Austria and Germany, and A Lovely Family in
Brazil? This is the Addams
Family.
Are the Munsters? The Munsters?
No.
No. The Cosby Show.
Nope.
I mean, I thought
Married
the
with
same
Children?
Answer.
We're talking, yes, early 90s. Married with Children is what it was.
Oh, yes.
Oh my goodness.
I think that Gruesome one is
the Gruesomely Decent.
Yes, that's...
They are.
But wait, did they say decent? I think just
that's what put me out.
Gruesomely Family, yes.
Yeah,
a Gruesomely Decent Family. Oh. It reminds me of some people's Twitter handles. I follow the comedian Daniel Tosh, and his description of himself is not a doctor. That's actually the way he describes himself. I'm like, the Mayo Family, a Gruesomely Decent Family. Something like that, you know. In what TV show was Broadway superstar Mary Martin's son shot by Hollywood superstar Bing Crosby's daughter?
Dallas.
Yeah, it's Dallas. Yeah, 1980.
Who shot J.R.?
Yep.
Wow.
Martin's son Larry Hagman portrayed unscrupulous Texas oil magnate J.R. Ewing, and Crosby's daughter Mary portrayed his scheming sister-in-law slash mistress Kristen Shepherd. Mm. And while we think a little bit more about 80s primetime soaps, let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor
flashback.
1998.
On my left,
One of the original founding fathers of Ask the Professor from the Department of History, Professor Emeritus, former chair, Fred Hayes.
Yes. Well, thank you, Ed.
I want to begin this program, which is the last program I will be moderating, with a set of questions that were actually sent to Borders by Bert Tilley of Atala, Alabama. Bert has been one of our regular questioners for, it seems like, forever. He says, good luck, Edwin, George, and Sarah. Don't be a stranger, but stay strange. Thank you, Bert. Yes. This U.S. industrialist made cars, the Hoover and the Grand Coulee Dams, aluminum foil, and the Liberty Ships. Who was he?
Henry Kaiser.
That's right. That's right.
He made the Kaiser roll, too. Yeah,
after don't he got through being Emperor of Germany.
Yeah. There you go. What deformity had Kaiser Wilhelm II?
His arm was withered. His left arm.
It occurred during his birth. What was it?
His withered arm.
That's right.
Royalty is itself a deficiency.
Yeah.
Did he pitch for the Tigers?
We are back with some great questions from Kimberly Richards. Thanks so much for sending these in. These theme songs do not share the name of the show that they are the theme song for. Name the show given the song's title.
Suicide is Painless? That's got to be in there.
It's not one of the choices.
Oh, darn.
Not one of the choices. My Life.
Billy Joel's song, My Life?
I don't think that's what it is.
No, that's It's My Life, isn't it?
Yeah. My Life. A TV show, two words, both start with B.
Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies.
Don't that might be the Billy Joel song.
Ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
Is it? Okay, I was wrong.
Hanks, Peter Scolari, Donna Dixon.
Oh, I was thinking Perfect Strangers.
No, that's Balky.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I get those two confused.
So off. Oh, man.
One's Men in Dragon Hotel, you know.
Well, that's why I wasn't thinking it was the Billy Joel song. All right, how about John Philip Sousa's Liberty Bell March?
That's Married with Children, isn't it?
Nope.
No. What's that one I'm thinking? No, that's... Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Wow. Yes.
That's what it was.
The Street Beater is the name of the song. The Street Beater.
Monday Night Football?
Nope, that's heavy action.
You're going to make me kind of a...
Columbo.
I believe this song goes.
Sanford and Son.
Yep, Sanford and Son.
Oh, wow.
So I know the Street Beater now. Nadia's Theme. If only my wife were here, she'd know this one. Yes, it was.
Edge of Night.
One Life to Live.
Young and the Restless. Young and the Restless. I'm so glad we had this time together for a famous variety show. Carol Burnett. Yes. T.S.O.P., The Sound of Philadelphia.
Ooh, I can hear this
very
song. It's written by Barry White, arranged by Isaac Hayes.
You're exactly
not
right.
Not Daxi.
Shaft?
No, it was a dance show.
Soul Train.
The Sound of Philadelphia.
Don Cornelius.
Now that explains a 40-year-old mystery. Because my uncle and my grandmother had an LP with TSOP on it.
Oh, wow.
Never knew what it sounded like.
40-year-old.
Literally.
Don Cornelius. With a little help from my friends, was the theme song to what show?
Hold on, I can hear this.
Yeah.
Not the Beatles song.
No, it was the Joe Cocker version, if I remember correctly.
Comedy.
Oh, this was definitely a comedy.
Sitcom, was it,
Daniel Stern was the voiceover for A Boy's Life.
Oh, The Wonder Years.
The Wonder Years.
Couldn't come on.
Brainstone, sorry.
Don't Think Too Hard. The name of the song is The Unknown Stuntman.
The Fall Guy.
Sung by Lee Majors himself.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
really. Wow.
Yeah, he sung. Not that was great. If you call it singing, mumbling into a mic.
Right. Park Avenue Beat.
Great Acres.
Mm-mm.
That's a good guess.
This is a legal show. P.M.
Magnum P.I.? No.
P.M.
A legal show.
Legal show.
P.M.
Who doesn't like shows about lawyers? It was Perry Mason.
I think you guys can handle
this one pretty easily, though. It's Believe It or Not.
It's Greatest American Hero.
Yes. I do not understand why people like that show. I'm sorry. It's just my thing.
There was a line on, Family Guy? His superpower is staying relevant 30 years after he's only had one season on the air.
Oh, no. Do you remember, after the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt?
Yeah, they couldn't call him Mr. Hinckley anymore.
Mr. Hinckley.
Oh my god.
They called him Mr. H.
Oh my
Connie Selleck.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Who did it start? Like Ralph Cott or no?
Connie Selleck is the one I remember.
Yeah, the gal.
The FBI.
Robert Culp.
Yes.
And I can't remember who played the guy who played Mr. H.
Who was the first celebrity who guest starred as himself on The Simpsons?
Oh, this is too bad we can't ask
Michael
you.
Michael Jackson?
I know the answer to this question.
I know you know it.
Paul Simon.
He was singing one of the goofy songs from the episode, if that helps. So he's a singer.
Randy Newman.
No.
It's not Paul
Simon. Very, very famous, sort of one of those timeless singers.
Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett. He was on The Simpsons.
Yes, he was.
I was going to go Mel Torme, but
he was singing the their riff on New York, New York, which was Capital City. No other name. So Cookie Monster revealed his first name on Sesame Street in 2004, describing the kind of monster he was before he ate his first cookie. Do you remember what he said his name was?
Finn.
Girl Scout. Mm-hmm.
Before the eating disorder, he was
hypoglycemic monster.
My kids are obsessed with this Cookie Monster wanders through the Museum of Modern Art in New York and ponders the paintings and says these like philosophical phrases. And it is relatively amusing. Recently, he observes, I think lasagna is just spaghetti flavored cake. that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But do you remember what he said his name was? It's in that zone, like when we found out Kramer's first name. Like, oh, of course, Cosmo. That
like
makes
Bartholomew
perfect sense.
Bartholomew or Sebastian.
It's a one.
Matthew David.
One syllable.
Mike.
Ed.
Bill.
No. His name is Sid.
John. Sid.
Sid. Not El Sid.
Too long.
Sid Monster?
Sid.
Sid. Sid. Before he became the Cookie Monster. It's like he forgot who he was.
What, like Bono?
Oh, yeah. What was that guy's name?
David Hewson.
David Hewson. Bono sounds much better.
I was going with Smurf. I mean, he was blue in color.
No, he was orange originally.
What?
He was orange.
The cookies turned him blue?
Yeah.
Wow. Orange. I know asparagus can turn things, too.
Seriously, he was not blue originally.
Not in a good way. Yeah. Who provides the voiceover for Mayor Adam West? On the TV show Family Guy?
Adam West
does, yes. Who played Batman and Bruce Wayne in the original Batman series, which we seem to always have a question on.
It's a classic.
Question groups. It is a classic.
Campy.
What was the favorite beverage of these TV detectives? Dan Tana on Vegas $.
Dr. Pepper?
No, that's not what Dan Tana.
Tab?
Right. Not Tab. Cool. Something pretty wholesome.
Milk.
Milk is what Dan Tannen. What about Barnaby Urich? Jones from Barnaby Jones?
Chocolate milk?
Geritol. Mucilix.
No, coffee with Pepto-Bismol in it. No. That was from some movie, I got to remember.
Barnaby Jones, 1973 to 80, and he drank what?
The tears of his victims.
No, he drank milk too. Both of them drank milk.
Come on, do you remember what that was? Lee Merriweather's first major gig.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's right. Was Barnaby Jones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Buddy Ebsen.
She was the assistant.
Yep. Buddy Ebsen.
Mark Shea was the little seedy looking assistant. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a photographic memory?
Just enough.
All right.
Just enough.
I ran out of film, that's all.
What catchy TV game show theme song was originally written as a lullaby?
Jeopardy?
Yeah,
Jeopardy
has the Jeopardy theme is called.
I was going to guess exactly
Think.
That because I always fall asleep during Final Jeopardy.
The show's creator
break is so long.
The show's creator Merv Griffin, I think most folks know that, initially wrote it for his son and called it Time for Tony. He later reworked it, renamed it, and used it as the countdown music for Final Jeopardy when the show debuted in 1964. It became the show's theme song 20 years later when Jeopardy was syndicated and Alex Trebek came the host. For the record, didn't work very hard on that song, isn't it? No. We always say it's I'm a Little Teapot. It's basically the same tune.
It is?
Basically,
yeah.
Yeah, it's close.
It's really close enough.
Especially the ending. I'm not sure about the first part. I'm not convinced.
I'm going to have to listen to it now.
One of my earliest memories is my dad singing me that song. And cracking me up.
Which one? The Jeopardy theme song or I'm a Little Teapot?
Or Alex Trebek?
Sugar Bowl.
That's right. What does Matt go to sleep?
Yep, exactly. Time for Matt to go to sleep. What's the maximum amount of money a contestant could possibly win in a single game of Jeopardy if they get every single question right and beg off the daily doubles until they have the maximum amount of money, always doubling what they get.
280,000.
It's never happened in the history of the show.
280,000?
Mm-mm. It is way more than that.
Wow. A million?
It's not a million, though.
27,000.
No. 560,000.
We saw Kendra.
39 cents.
No, we're circling it. We'll let Kendra finish.
What did you say?
560,000.
Yeah, I'm giving it to you. It's $566,400. That's you're crazy today. You're on fire.
Okay, guys, we're going to the party store. We're gonna buy tickets, and we'll have Kendra buy the last set of tickets. Okay.
I just need you guys to buy tickets first.
Yes, exactly.
And then I'll get the third one.
Yeah, which we're all splitting.
All right. So let's see if you guys can follow that up with another big win here. Okay. This would mean that the contestant would have to sweep the boards, both boards, find all three daily doubles in the top tier and the end of each round, make them true daily doubles, and wager everything in Final Jeopardy. The contestant would have $35,600 after Jeopardy, $283,200 after double, and of course double that after final. The highest one-day winning total for a game of Jeopardy, 14th of September 2010, was what? For the record, breaking Ken Jennings' legendary record of $75,000.
Ooh.
That comes really close to the maximum. I mean, if you think how much money's on the board. Some dude last week was all like, with one day cash winnings totaling $2,000. And you're like, oh, I can't even look at this guy. I feel so bad. So Ken Jennings had the record at 75. Who beat him? I mean, how much did he beat him by on September 14th? $114,000. No, it was only $77,000.
Only.
Yeah. I do not have that kind of
pocket money.
I'm giving it to Kendra. 560. Where did that come from? That's so great.
She had the rest of us do all the heavy lifting, and then she just came
by. She went between the 500 million and the 27,000.
It's true. Circle it. That's all.
I kind of want to see somebody try really hard to get the 35.6 after round one, and then just sit back and just be like, I'm not playing for the rest of the game.
I double dog dare you to kick my butt.
Seriously. What was the very first reality TV show which aired on PBS of all stations in 1973. The 12-episode documentary series focused on the lives of Pat and Bill Loud of Santa Barbara, California, and their five teenage kids.
What was this show called? I remember it. Not well, obviously, but I do remember it.
Barnaby Jones. Egghead. Yeah. It was called An American Family.
Hmm. Okay.
12 episodes. During the series, Pat demanded a divorce, and son Lance announced to the family he was gay.
Yep.
So there you go.
In the 70s?
73.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The mother of all reality
Kardashian.
Shows. Yeah. We're going to have to wait and do this some other time. But we have very much enjoyed our time with you, listeners, including to say goodbye, Professor Chuck Harkett.
Hey, goodbye.
Professor Dave Chow.
See ya.
Professor Prasad Nugapal.
Ta-ta.
Professor Kendra Evans.
Toodaloo.
And Professor Jason Roach.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Now, these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor, or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM, or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed to the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Tavila Lucio, technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.